The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. The next half hour, I'm going to be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter and also from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And first of all, I'm going to finish up news briefs from the March Harvard Health Letter. Eating more tomatoes may help to lower high blood pressure. Can consuming more tomatoes help to lower the risk of hypertension? A study published online November 24, 2023 by the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology looked at 7,000 people aged 55 to 80 participating in the Spanish PREDIMED, P-R-E-D-I-M-E-D, dietary study. About 83% of them had hypertension, and they all had one or more cardiovascular risk factors, like diabetes, smoking, high cholesterol, excess weight, or a family history of early onset heart disease. Everyone filled out annual questionnaires on their food consumption, including raw tomatoes, tomato sauce, and gazpacho. After 3 years, researchers observed an association between eating more tomatoes and lower blood pressure. They also found that among participants who did not have hypertension, those who consumed the most tomatoes reduced the overall risk for hypertension by 36%, compared with those who consumed the least, less than 44 grams. Researchers suggested that tomatoes' high amount of lycopene is a possible reason. Lycopene, a plant chemical that gives tomatoes their red color, is a powerful antioxidant that helps fight inflammation and molecules that damage cells. Now, here's a very practical article, again from the Harvard Health Letter, and it's entitled, What Should You Do When Sciatica Flares? People with diagnosed sciatica have no trouble recognizing a flare-up. It strikes as numbness, tingling, or pain in the buttock and down the leg, caused by irritation to the sciatic nerve, which begins in the spine and travels downward into the leg. While it's easy to identify a flare-up, it's trickier to tamp it down. It may take a combination of approaches to ease discomfort. Coping with sciatica discomfort starts with pill-free strategies that you can try immediately. The first is stay active. One of the most important things you can do when sciatica flares is to avoid bed rest. Part of low back pain is muscle related, possibly because muscles surrounding the irritated nerve root tighten and try to protect the area. Movement keeps the muscles loose and working correctly. If you don't move, you can get tight and increase the pain, says Dr. Max Epstein, a physiatrist, PHYSIATRIST, at Harvard-affiliated Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. If activity is painful, do only what you can tolerate. Think of a green, yellow, or red zone of pain. The green zone is a mild amount of pain while doing an activity. That's okay. But if you get into the yellow zone, it's time to pull back and modify an activity. For example, if it hurts to carry a full laundry basket, take a few things out. Or if it's painful to stand at the sink and do the dishes, open the cabinet below the sink and rest your foot on the bottom of the cabinet. That will help to take the tension off the nerve. Keep the muscles loose and limber with gentle stretching, but only within the green zone of pain. You might stand and try to touch your toes, or stretch your back and leg muscles, or try some yoga pose, like the cat-cow, The way you do the cat-cow is to get down on all fours with your hands directly beneath your shoulders and your knees beneath your hips. Inhale and lift your head and tailbone toward the ceiling while curving your lower spine toward the floor. As you exhale, round your back, bringing your chin toward your chest and tucking your tailbone under. Repeat the exercise 10 times. Hot or cold therapy for sciatica can take many forms. You might soak in a warm bath or apply a hot pack or cold pack to your leg or back. What works for one person might not work for another, so you may have to experiment to see what's best for you. Dr. Epstein says, how does it help sciatica? Heat may loosen muscles and cold may tamp down inflammation, but we don't know for sure, Dr. Epstein says. The next is relaxation. Staying relaxed is an important part of controlling acute pain or chronic pain. All pain is processed in the mind. If you're able to calm the processing centers, the perception of pain may decrease. He recommends trying breathing exercises, meditation, yoga or tai chi, practicing mindfulness, focusing attention on the present moment, might also help ease discomfort by helping you to accept it. Then there are several drugstore remedies that can play a part in relieving sciatica. The first is oral painkillers. Oral non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like Advil or Motrin help reduce inflammation, which reduces pain. They may also cause stomach ulcers and bleeding, liver or kidney damage, or an increased risk of heart attack. So get your doctors okay before using them and find out the safe dose for you. Acetaminophen or Tylenol is often less effective at relieving sciatica pain than NSAIDs, but it's also less risky. Unless you take it in very high doses, which can cause liver damage, the usual limit is no more than 3,000 milligrams per day. But your doctor might set a lower limit depending on your health. Then there are topical painkillers. Applying painkillers to your skin like creams, gels, or patches can also bring sciatica relief. Topical NSAIDs like diclofenac gel, which is also called Voltaren, may have fewer risks than NSAID pills, since topicals stay close to the site of absorption and aren't well absorbed by the rest of the body. It's still wise, though, to check with your doctor before using them. Other types of topicals with fewer risks include creams, sprays, and patches that contain anesthetics like lidocaine, pain signal interrupters like menthol or capsaicin, or arnica gel, an herbal remedy thought to have anti-inflammatory properties. Then there's turmeric, T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C. Turmeric, a golden yellow spice, contains curcumin, which appears to have anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties. Although there has not been studies that prove its benefit, it's the one supplement that I would support for pain relief. There's no clear recommendation for dosage, but 1,000 milligrams per day might help. You can take it all at once or break it up into morning and evening doses. A typical flare of sciatica lasts for a few days to a week. If it's not improving or responding to home remedies, it's time to make an appointment with your doctor. Your doctor might order imaging tests and prescribe a prescription anti-inflammatory drug, like oral or injectable prednisone. That will buy you a window of time to strengthen muscles without pain and keep them flexible. That will help your body keep strong and protected, so you'll be in a better place than where you started. What if you don't reach out for help? At times, the nerve stays irritated for years, Dr. Epstein says, so try not to delay treatment. Our interventions are able to put out the fire, or at least calm the severity of symptoms in a meaningful way. If you'd like more information, check out the Harvard Special Health Report, Finding Relief for Sciatica, which is available at www.health.harvard.edu/FRFSC. Finally, in the Harvard Health Letter, here's an article entitled New Thinking About Tinnitus. Experts have long debated the most common causes of tinnitus, a ringing, whooshing, roaring, or hissing sound in the ears without an external sound source. Some have maintained that tinnitus is triggered by hearing loss. With less sound coming in, the brain compensates by becoming hyperactive and generating a phantom noise. But that theory hasn't explained the problem for people with normal hearing who still have tinnitus. What causes tinnitus in those cases? Increasingly, Harvard Medical School scientists are finding evidence that some people have hidden hearing loss, damage to the auditory nerve, which carries around signals from the ear to the brain that isn't picked up by conventional tests. Researchers first discovered the phenomenon in lab mice in 2009. From there, it wasn't difficult to add two and two by suggesting that the loss of these nerve fibers in people with normal hearing tests could be associated with tinnitus, says Stephanie Mason, a tinnitus researcher and associate professor of otolaryngology, head and neck surgery at Harvard Medical School. Subsequent studies began making the connection. The latest, believed to be the largest and most nuanced to date, was published November 30th, 2023, in Scientific Reports. Mason and his colleagues at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts Eye and Ear recruited 300 people ages 18 to 72 with normal hearing tests who had chronic tinnitus, no tinnitus, or intermittent tinnitus. Scientists measured participants' auditory nerve responses and brainstem activity. Compared with not having tinnitus, having chronic tinnitus was associated with loss of auditory nerve fibers, as well as increased brain activity. That fit with the idea that as a result of hearing loss, the brain increases its activity, which is possibly why you perceive a tone or sound that isn't there. For people with measurable hearing loss, getting hearing aids sometimes reduces the perception of tinnitus. But hearing aids aren't recommended for people with normal hearing, even if your doctor suspects hidden hearing loss, since we don't have tests outside of research labs to measure it. Still, the new evidence linking hidden hearing loss and tinnitus offers hope for people with tinnitus. When you have hidden hearing loss, only a portion of the auditory nerve has degenerated. Another portion remains alive for years or decades, and a number of experiments by others have found that it's possible to regenerate nerve fibers in animal models. If we can one day regenerate those fibers in humans, it might bring back missing information to the brain, reducing its hyperactivity and the perception of tinnitus. Until that day comes, and it's unclear when or if it will, we have only limited ways to cope with the problem. If you have tinnitus despite a normal hearing test, report it to your primary care or ear, nose, and throat specialist. In rare cases, the noise can be caused by a tumor or cyst pinching the auditory nerve, a buildup of earwax, or blood vessel damage. Sometimes treating underlying conditions like those can reduce or even eliminate the noise. More often, we can only learn to live with or reduce the tinnitus. The following strategies may help. First, listening to white noise or nature sounds might make the tinnitus seem quieter. Use a white noise machine, sleep headphones, earbuds, or a wearable sound masking device. Use mind-body therapies, cognitive behavioral therapy, mindfulness-based tinnitus treatment, and biofeedback can help you redirect negative thoughts and emotions linked to tinnitus. Join an online support group. Look for tinnitus groups on Facebook or through the American Tinnitus Association, which is at www.ata.org. You may pick up tips that work for other people, or at least feel empowered by camaraderie. Stress may increase both your perception of tinnitus and your reaction to it. Try yoga or tai chi to help manage stress, since you'll be concentrating on movement and breathing. You might not focus on the tinnitus as much. Live a healthier lifestyle. Practice good sleep hygiene. Exercise daily and limit alcohol intake. Each one of those healthy habits can help reduce the frequency and intensity of tinnitus and also reduce stress. You should consider trying bimodal stimulation. These new devices for home use provide two types of stimulation: sound along with gentle taps to the wrist delivered by a bracelet. They aren't yet widely recommended, as there's not enough evidence that they work, but preliminary results are encouraging. Ask your physician about your options. Now we're going to turn to the Mayo Clinic Health Letter of March 2024. And the first article is called Dysphagia. And of course, dysphagia means swallowing problems. You may take 100 bites of food a day and give zero thought to what happens next. In most cases, you don't need to. The process involves about 50 pairs of nerves and muscles working in synchronization with significant assistance from gravity that allows food to travel from mouth to stomach without drama or delays. For some people, swallowing isn't a smooth process. Occasional swallowing difficulty isn't always a cause for concern. You may just be eating too fast or chewing inadequately. But a wide range of problems can cause swallowing difficulty called dysphagia. D-Y-S-P-H-A-G-I-A. Changes with age, like a dry mouth or the loss of muscle strength and coordination, may affect swallowing efficiency. Having been intubated and on prolonged breathing support with a ventilator, common in people treated for respiratory failure, like from severe COVID, can result in rough return to swallowing. Persistent swallowing difficulty warrants a visit to your healthcare team. The problem could be due to a serious medical condition. Difficulty swallowing itself can lead to problems with pneumonia and with malnutrition. Dysphagia occurs when something goes wrong at any stage of the swallowing process. Here's how that process works. The aroma of the food you're about to eat releases saliva from your glands in the mouth. When you begin to swallow, your tongue triggers the swallowing reflex by pushing everything to the back of your throat and into the esophagus, a hollow tube that connects your mouth to your stomach. This reflex also prevents what's being swallowed from entering your windpipe and lungs by covering the opening of the windpipe with a small piece of cartilage called the epiglottis. At the top and bottom of the esophagus are circular bands of muscle called sphincters. They're closed most of the time, but they open to allow food to pass through. Muscles in the walls of your esophagus contract in sequence, pushing food toward your stomach. Dysphagia is classified by where the problem occurs. Oropharyngeal dysphagia refers to swallowing problems in the mouth or upper part of the throat. Certain conditions weaken the throat muscles, making it difficult to move food from the mouth into the throat and esophagus. This can cause choking, gagging, or coughing. Or it can produce a sensation of food or fluids going down the windpipe or up the nose. Common causes of oropharyngeal dysphagia are neurologic disorders like multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, and Parkinson's disease, and also brain injury from a stroke or spinal cord damage. Zenker's diverticulum, in which a small pouch forms in the throat and traps food particles, is another cause. So is cancer and radiation therapy. On the other hand, esophageal dysphagia happens in or near the esophagus. Food feels stuck or gets caught in the base of the throat or in the chest after swallowing begins. Regurgitation of food that hasn't mixed with stomach contents may occur. A main cause of esophageal dysphagia is narrowing of the esophagus, called a stricture. This can be caused by gastroesophageal reflux. Tissue damage can occur when stomach acid backs up into the esophagus. This can lead to scarring and spasm of the lower esophagus. Also, it can be caused by cancerous or non-cancerous tumors. Tumors themselves narrowing the esophagus or radiation therapy used to treat these tumors can lead to inflammation and scarring. It can be caused by a condition called eosinophilic esophagitis. This immune system disease occurs when white blood cells called eosinophils build up in the esophagus. The disease causes inflammation that can narrow part of the esophagus. Then there are esophageal rings. A thin area of narrowing in the lower esophagus can cause difficulty swallowing solid foods. The rings are also called Schatzky's rings. Then there is non-relaxing esophageal sphincter, or achalasia. With achalasia, food has trouble entering your stomach because the lower esophageal sphincter doesn't relax properly. Muscles in the esophageal wall are weak. The result may be regurgitation of food not yet mixed with stomach contents. To find the cause of dysphagia, a member of the healthcare team will likely ask you for a description of your swallowing troubles and perform a physical exam. Imaging may be done after you swallow a barium solution that coats the esophagus, highlighting its contour on x-rays. Thin scopes may be inserted in your throat to visually examine the tissues, or pressure-sensitive tube may be placed in the esophagus to measure muscle contractions. Treatment typically involves one of several options. The first is swallowing rehabilitation therapy. This is the primary treatment for problems related to oropharyngeal dysphagia and is directed by a speech or swallowing therapist. The therapy aims to improve the safety of swallowing, like minimizing food or drink accidentally entering your lungs or airways. Therapy may include an assessment of which types of food or liquids can be most easily and safely swallowed. Then there's medications. Acid-suppressing drugs may be prescribed for GERD and any associated damage in the esophagus. The drugs reduce esophageal irritation due to reflux stomach acid. Another possible treatment is esophageal dilatation. This procedure may be used to widen an area of esophageal narrowing. One method of dilatation involves an endoscopic procedure in which a flexible balloon is lowered into your esophagus and then inflated, stretching the tightened tissue. Then there is surgery. Tumors in the throat or esophagus may be removed with surgery. In addition, surgical procedures often done with an endoscope may be used to clear a food-trapping Zenker's diverticulum. The article goes on to point out that when someone around you is choking and the person can cough forcefully, let them keep coughing. This might naturally remove the stuck object. If the person's conscious but can't cough, cry, or laugh forcefully, start first aid, then call for emergency medical help. You should give 5 back blows. Stand to the side just behind the person, place your arm across the person's chest, and bend them at the waist to face the ground. Strike 5 separate times between their shoulder blades with the heel of your hand. Then you should give 5 abdominal thrusts, called the Heimlich maneuver. If back blows don't remove the object, give 5 abdominal thrusts. Stand behind the person, place 1 foot slightly in front of the other, make a fist with 1 hand, put it above the person's navel, grasp your fist with the other hand, press into the stomach with a quick upward thrust, as if trying to lift the person up, 5 times. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.